All their lives, the brothers remained the closest of friends. Apart from mathematics and physics, they shared a passion for sport, particularly football. Harold, the better player, won a silver medal at the 1908 Olympics as a member of the Danish football team that lost to England in the final. Also regarded by many to be intellectually more gifted, he gained a doctorate in mathematics a year before Niels received his in physics in May 1911. Their father, however, always maintained that his eldest son was the special one in the family. Dressed in white tie and tails as custom demanded, Bohr began the public defense of his doctoral thesis. It lasted just 90 minutes, the shortest on record. One of the two examiners was his father's friend, Christian Christensen. He regretted that no Danish physicist was well enough informed about the theory of metals to be able to judge a dissertation on the subject. Nevertheless, Bohr was awarded his doctorate and sent copies of the thesis to men like Max Planck and Hendrik Lorentz. When no one replied, he knew it had been a mistake to send it without first having it translated. Instead of German or French, which many leading physicists spoke fluently, Bohr decided on an English translation and managed to convince a friend to produce one. Whereas his father had chosen Leipzig and his brother Göttingen, German universities being the traditional place for high-flying Danes to complete their education, Bohr chose Cambridge University. The intellectual home of Newton and Maxwell was, for him, the center of physics. The translated thesis would be his calling card. He hoped that it would lead to a dialogue with Sir Joseph John Thomson, the man he described later as the genius who showed the way for everybody. After a lazy summer of sailing and hiking, Bohr arrived in England at the end of September 1911 on a one-year scholarship funded by Denmark's famous Carlsberg Brewery. I found myself rejoicing this morning when I stood outside a shop and by chance happened to read the address Cambridge over the door, he wrote to his fiancée Margrethe Nurland. The letters of introduction and the Bohr name led to a warm welcome from the university's physiologists who remembered his late father. They helped him find a small two-room flat on the edge of town, and he was kept very busy with arrangements, visits, and dinner parties. But for Bohr, it was his meeting with Thomson, JJ to his friends and students alike, which soon preyed on his mind. A bookseller's son from Manchester, Thomson had been elected the third head of the Cavendish Laboratory in 1884, within a week of his 28th birthday. He was an unlikely choice, after James Clerk Maxwell and Lord Rayleigh, to lead the prestigious experimental research facility, and not just because of his youth. JJ was very awkward with his fingers, one of his assistants later admitted, and I found it necessary not to encourage him to handle the instruments. Yet if the man who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the electron lacked a delicate touch, others testified to Thomson's intuitive ability to comprehend the inner working of intricate apparatus without the trouble of handling it.